This is Eagle 1490 AM WLCX La Crosse and streaming everywhere on the Civic Media app.
ABC News, I'm Brian Clark. The families of the victims of the New Orleans attack are discussing the hard lessons they've learned.
Life is so fragile and so short, and it can be taken at any given moment, and you really need to love those around you.
That's Jack Beck talking about his brother Tiger Beck, one of 14 people killed in the truck attack. And authorities say the attacker was inspired by ISIS. ABC News has obtained a bulletin sent by the FBI urging law enforcement to remain vigilant in case of copycat attacks. The Surgeon General wants warning labels added to alcohol, warning of the increased risk of cancer from alcohol consumption. It's similar to the labels on cigarettes. President Biden decided to block the nearly $15 billion sale of U.S. steel to Japan's Nippon Steel. An announcement's expected today. And the new Congress convenes today. The first order of business is voting for Speaker. Mike Johnson wants to keep the job, but ABC has counted 17 Republicans who are noncommittal. This is ABC News. There's an investigation in Southern California where a small plane crashed into a building in Fullerton Thursday. Two people were killed, 19 were injured when the single-engine craft exploded into a fireball after striking the roof of a furniture factory with at least 200 people working inside. An endangered dolphin called J35 was seen this week carrying the body of her deceased calf in what researchers call an act of mourning.
J35 made headlines while doing the same thing 7 years ago after losing a different calf. She carried its remains for more than 1,000 miles over 17 days. Calf mortality is high. Only 50% of newborn orcas make it to their first birthday. And researchers warn that southern resident killer whales like J35 may be on the brink of extinction.
That's ABC's Andrew Dimbert. There's a broccoli recall over listeria concerns involving 12-ounce bags of ready-to-eat market-side broccoli florets sold in 20 states by Walmart. I'm Brian Clark, ABC News.
If you're living with dry age-related macular degeneration or dry AMD, you may be at risk for developing geographic atrophy or GA. GA can be unpredictable and progress rapidly, leading to irreversible vision loss. Now there's something you can do to
slow it down and get it going slower.
Izervay is proven to slow GA progression.
Izervay.
Izervay or Avastin Captid Pagel is a prescription eye injection used to treat GA. Don't take it if you have an infection or active swelling in or around your eye. Izervay can cause eye infection, retinal detachment, or increased risk of wet AMD. Izervay may temporarily increase eye pressure. Your vision may be impaired after an eye injection or exam. Don't delay. Ask your doctor about Izervay today.
Izervay gets GA going slower.
Visit Izervay.com. That's Izervay.com.
Enjoying this local program? Find the complete Civic Media lineup at civicmedia.us or the Civic Media app.
It's the Packers and the Bears. Hi, I'm Mike Clemens with sports. The Packers host the Bears Sunday. Green Bay has beat Chicago now 11 times in a row. Three Packers players named to the Pro Bowl, Rashawn Gary, and two free agents who joined the team this year, Josh Jacobs and safety Xavier McKinney.
Definitely, it's definitely special. You know, obviously this organization bringing in two great guys, two great leaders, and helping be a part of, you know, already successful team, and just taking us that much further, taking another step further.
NBA, the Bucks try to make a comeback, scoring 20 unanswered points in the fourth quarter, but lost at home to the Nets, 113-110. Doc Rivers asked, have the Bucks played the right way since their win in the NBA Cup?
Yeah, well, honestly, I thought we have played the right way overall. Since Vegas, we've been shorthanded. There's not a lot of nights like this where we play offense like the way we played tonight. So, yeah.
The Bucks host the Trailblazers, 7 o'clock tomorrow night. With sports, I'm Mike Clemens.
On your entertainment beat, I'm Pete Schwabba. Tom Cruise is getting into the casting business. The Mission Impossible star is currently looking for a younger version of himself to play the role of Ethan Hunt. The next two installments of the franchise, those would be films 8 and 9, will be prequels. Rumor has it the 8th film will be Cruise's last on screen, but he will still continue to produce the franchise. Glenn Powell was initially rumored to take over the role, but those rumblings have recently been shot down. No word yet on whether or not Cruise will expect his younger self to do his own stunts. could be a deal breaker. Sticking with the action thriller genre, Viola Davis will play the president in the upcoming film G20. Variety reports the Oscar winner will play Commander-in-Chief Danielle Sutton, who narrowly avoids being kidnapped, then proceeds to save her family and the world. The film will be directed by Patricia Riggin and drop on Amazon Prime this coming spring. For more showbiz fun, tune in to Nightlight with me, Peach Wabba, weeknights from 6 to 8 p.m. on the Civic Media Radio Network.
This is your local Civic Media radio station. Want to hear even more? Anytime? Find all of it at civicmedia.us.
Partly cloudy and cold today, our high in the mid-teens, but the wind out of the northwest at 10 to 20 is going to keep that wind chill below zero all day long. Tonight, mostly clear, down to around zero for a low. Tomorrow, sunshine with a high once again in the low to mid-teens. I'm meteorologist Sean Cable. Outside right now, it's 12.
Dom Salvia.
Next time, former U.S. attorney and host of Amicus, a law review, James Santel joins me. Was Merrick Garland the worst AG ever? Plus, updates on the speaker's race and the Wisconsin Election Commission investigation. Tune in.
The Dom Salvia Show, weekdays 4 till 6. Eagle 1490 AM.
All across Wisconsin from Civic Media, this is Up North News Radio. Now, live from our Lake Wissota studio, here's the founding editor of Up North News, Pat Breitlow.
Hey, good morning. Welcome back to Up North News Radio, unabashedly Wisconsin, brought to you by Courier Newsroom and carried by our friends here on the Civic Media Radio Network at 7:06 on this Friday, January 3rd, 2025. In just a few minutes here, we're going to visit with State Senate Democratic Leader Diane Hesselbein about the new legislative session that begins on Monday. With much thinner Republican majorities, thanks to fair maps, will that lead to a fair session with Democratic bills and ideas getting their day in the sun? We'll ask her about that and other high priorities coming up in the session that begins next week. We'll talk to Mark Jacob in the second half hour about media coverage, both of the Trump transition and the passing of former President Jimmy Carter. Dan Schumacher visits with us near the end of the hour to preview the weekend in sports, including the Packers taking on the Bears. But, of course, it is Friday. We've got a weekend forecast that's coming up. And Rob from Tigerton telling us good morning from Tigerton. It is cloudy and 11 degrees, a wind chill of 2 below. Yesterday, busy doing paperwork and other jobs around the house. You had the theme from Sanford and Son in the last hour. I had a record album of the Bay City Rollers back when I was a kid. I love that song. Too bad Brittany couldn't steer the snow that's going to hit Missouri, Central Illinois our way. But make sure you check your pipes and your sewer pits from freezing with the lack of snow. Brittany, I believe that Rob has covered all the bases. I thought about that yesterday as well. Check those pipes.
Yes, absolutely. This is the time to do it. And he's got a good point because we don't have any snow out there. There's nothing insulating it at all. So we have to be careful for the entire weekend. We're already crashing. Temperatures are feeling like 7 below into areas like Antigo, Phillips, but down by Greg, Kenosha, we're at 21 degrees. So a big spread across the state. We've got clouds more up north, a few flurries still flying, lake effect snow still with a winter weather advisory into Iron County. Another 1 to 3 inches of snowfall is expected there, but the rest of us in a dry spell this weekend. It's going to be sunny and cold with high temperatures today in the low to mid teens. But of course, with a few flurries flying around and winds starting to get breezy, gusting around 20 to 25 miles per hour, it's really going to be feeling more like 7 below probably for our highs for a lot of us. And then overnight tonight, as our temperatures fall to near zero, and those winds still feisty, it's going to be feeling more like 20 below. So a pretty cold morning tomorrow. We stay chilly tomorrow as well with highs into those teens again, but the winds start to ease just a little bit. So we will be feeling a little bit warmer near 0 degrees, and we'll slowly warm up into Sunday with highs in the upper teens and then low 20s by Monday. But like Rob said, there is a big snow and ice storm hitting south. I mean, this is so far south. It's into like Central Illinois, Missouri, Nebraska, but they're looking at 1 to 2 feet of potential snow, major ice accumulations. And while I don't like the ice, That snow sounds fun.
Yeah, unless you're traveling. And exactly. This is a big travel weekend for folks who got the kind of the extended holiday break. And needless to say, it's going to be a bit of a character builder for folks who have to go through that.
Yeah, and especially down south, they don't deal with it as often as we do, so they're not as prepped.
I believe Glenn Campbell sang, if it snows, that stretch down south won't ever stand the strain. But that was a song that we've never played for you before, Brittany, so don't worry about it.
Okay.
Wichita lineman. It sneaks up on you. You just never know when.
Yeah.
Thank you, Brittany. Have a wonderful weekend.
You too.
All right. Before we get to Senator Dianne Hesselbein to talk about the legislature, I wanted to note one comment from Alicia talking about the new Wisconsin Congressman Tony Weed, saying, how open do you think Tony Weed would be to me calling today and asking him to vote for Hakeem Jeffries to be Speaker of the House? And Alicia, I put it up here because you know what? It's not an impossible thing. The Republicans are going to be voting today for Speaker of the House as the new Congress opens up. And Mike Johnson is going to have to work hard for every possible vote to become the Speaker. He can only afford to lose one vote, and he's surely looking to lose more than that on the first ballot. But it is not impossible that some Republicans would vote for Hakeem Jeffries, the Democratic leader, to make him Speaker so that they would have somebody to blame for their own gridlock, the gridlock that got nothing done the past 2 years. And, you know, they're always looking for a villain. So, Alicia, I get that it's tongue-in-cheek, but I would say call up Congressman Weed anyway. What have you got to lose to see how this works out? All right, let's move it from the congressional level to the legislative level and welcome in Senate Democratic Leader Dianne Hesselbein from Middleton. Leader Hesselbein, good morning. Nice to have you back on Up North News Radio.
Good morning. Good morning, and I was glad to hear about the weather. I have a son who's 29, and he took off early this morning because he's driving back to St. Louis to go back to school. So,
Better to get an early start, yes.
Exactly. I was like, go home. As much as I want you to stay until Sunday, the weather's going to be bad, so you might as well go early.
That's right. So we get into this new session of the legislature, and you begin with the Senate Democratic Caucus with a bunch of new faces, half a dozen of them, if memory serves, after the November election and thanks to fairer maps and things like that. So you've got a whole new brood over there.
We do. It's an exciting time. We got two new from the Assembly, Dora Drake and Melissa Ratcliffe, who were in the Assembly for a number of years. And then we've got four new people in the state Senate. So we are ready. We are so excited and ready to go.
Yeah, I mean, we've talked to every one of them throughout the course of their various campaigns, as they were running. And I wanted to make sure I had the list here. You mentioned Dora. We've also got Jamie Wall from Green Bay, Kristen Elfhine, Sarah Kieski, Jody Haber-Sinikin. And so it's reminiscent of my being elected to the state Senate in 2006 when there were four of us new faces, just enough to give the Senate Dems the majority back then. And there's really not a lot of time to, you know, dwell on that. You've got to hit the ground running. And even though Democrats are in the minority this time, you're hitting the ground running in terms of trying to prepare a state budget with a $4 billion surplus, which to 99% of the population sounds like, okay, we can find a way to craft a win-win out of that. And it just seems like for these past few years, legislative Republicans are somehow allergic to doing a win-win proposal on a state budget that takes the surplus and does something for everybody. Any thought that with the fair maps and a smaller majority, you might see something closer to a win-win this time?
I'm not sure. I think we're going to see a few win-wins. I don't know what they're going to be. I have a hard time believing it's going to be about the surplus right now, but things change, the winds change, and people change their minds. Right now, the Republican Party is all they're talking about is tax cuts. I haven't seen their proposals. Everything they touted last time is a no-go because they do a lot of target tax cuts for the extreme wealthy and not really for the middle class. It has to be very targeted tax cuts. Maybe some property tax relief would be nice to see. I've mentioned that to the other party. We'll see if they can get there. But let's be clear. You know, we have that $4 billion because we haven't been funding K-12 schools like we should have for a decade. So all these people all across Wisconsin have been raising their property taxes to keep their neighborhood schools up and running in the way they want them to be, maybe it'd be better to give us a little bit of property tax relief since all those people made those decisions to raise their taxes because the state of Wisconsin was falling down on the job.
Yeah, exactly. It's the old saying that if you've got, you know, $100 in the bank and a hole in the roof, you don't actually have $100 in the bank because you got to fix that hole in the roof. Exactly. And you've got schools that have been underfunded for, you know, some 16 years here, not keeping up with the rate of inflation. So, yeah, you'll have some people saying put it directly into property tax relief, others saying put it directly into schools. But I don't want to get ahead of myself here, because before you talk about any kind of spending on schools or the UW or economic development or anything, with a multi-billion dollar surplus, I think Republicans are in fact going to at least lead with some kind of a tax cut proposal. And you stated three different times in the last session, Republicans put forward tax cuts that were disproportionately geared toward the very wealthy. Again, it's not your job to predict how they're going to behave, but I'm sure that's going to be their opening gambit. But how do you feel about the possibility that all of this begins with a tax cut that is more geared toward working families before you decide what else to do with the state budget?
My door is always open to their ideas. And so, you know, that's why I said, if it's the thing they did last session, they touted out that I wouldn't be interested. But if they come to something with that's more targeted, definitely I'd be interested in having that conversation with them.
Yeah. It just seems that the more we've talked about what has happened over the years with Governor Evers in office, and comparing that to, say, you know, Foxconn, that making those targeted decisions on Main Street businesses or in other businesses like Microsoft and Lilly down in Southeast Wisconsin, that we're increasingly getting the picture that these broad-based, you know, whether it's $3 billion to Foxconn or a big, massive across-the-board tax cut geared toward the very wealthy, these are not responsible fiscal decisions, and that Democrats, you know, have been proposing the things that are fiscally sound and have a much better payoff down the road. I would expect that Governor Evers will be unveiling something similar either in the State of the State address this month or the budget address next month.
I believe he will. And I think you're right. Some of these, you know, tax cuts they want to give blow holes in future budgets as well. So they're not written in a way that's sustainable. So we'll see. We'll see what they want to do. You know, I've also said that we need to put money out there for PFAS that's sitting in the Joint Finance Committee right now. The Republicans won't release it. There's a lot of things that we should be doing for education. You mentioned higher ed as well, technical colleges, workforce development, helping Main Street businesses. There's so much we could be doing with that money. But unfortunately, all the Republicans want to talk about are tax cuts right now.
Which gets us to this notion of we're talking about a new budget when there's still unfinished business from the old budget, this $125 million that they've been sitting on, holding hostage, that could have been put to work already, cleaning PFAS industrial chemicals out of our drinking water. And amazing, you know, it kind of is amazing to me that they haven't paid more of a price, that there hasn't been more of an outcry about the $50 million that they're sitting on for literacy programs, the $15 million for Chippewa Valley healthcare. Do you feel like those things from the last session are going to be stumbling blocks to getting this new budget bill written?
It's going to be interesting. You know, last time they needed our votes to pass three different big bills. They needed it for the alcohol licensing overview. They needed it for the Milwaukee Brewers stadium upgrade and shared revenue. So we're going to see. They have such a small majority with a lot of people that like to vote no. So yeah. I think I'm going to be spending a lot of time with Devin Lemahieu and Mary Falkowski trying to figure out how do we get this group to yes.
I can definitely see that. Diane Hesselbein, the Senate Democratic leader, is our guest. We'll continue our conversation in just a moment. This is Up North News Radio, live from Lake Wissota on the Civic Media Radio Network.
You're listening to the Eagle, WLCX, La Crosse's home for Matt and Air on Air.
You're listening to the American Democracy Minute, keeping your government by and for the people. In November 2022, Michigan voters passed a constitutional amendment enshrining voting protections and expanding ballot access. After the legislature implemented the voters' directive, GOP legislators sued, claiming that only the legislature could make such changes. Proposition 2 mandated 9 days of early voting, protections for voters and election workers from harassment, and a tracking system for absentee ballots. It allowed for the funding of secure drop boxes and the counting of military and overseas ballots if postmarked by Election Day, and several other reforms. Conjuring the independent state legislature theory, which argues that the U.S. Constitution allows only legislatures to control election law, 11 Michigan GOP legislators sued. On December 20th, the Federal Sixth Circuit Court of Appeals affirmed the lower court's denial of the Michigan legislators' claim. But importantly, it did so saying that while the individual legislators had no standing to bring the case, a full legislature could, leaving the door open a crack. The U.S. Supreme Court mostly dismissed the theory in 2023's Moore v. Harper case, but Justices Thomas, Gorsuch, and Alito appear to be all in on the theory. For the moment, the pro-voter reforms in Michigan are safe, but be watching for the independent state legislature theory to pop up again soon. We have the decision at AmericanDemocracyMinute.org. I'm Brian Beal.
Finding the special healthcare resources families need just got easier. Wisconsin Wayfinder, Children's Resource Network, helps kids with delays, disabilities, special healthcare needs, and mental health conditions. Call toll-free 877-947-2929. Ask questions. Get answers. Connect today toll-free 877-947-2929. Sponsored by the Wisconsin Department of Health Services.
This is the Talk of La Crosse. Eagle 1490 AM.
Here's something we didn't cover in our history lesson at 6:50. It was on this day in 1987 that the second class of the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame was announced, and it included the first woman in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. That, of course, would be Aretha Franklin. Welcome back to Up North News Radio on this Friday morning. It's January 3rd, just about 7:22, and we are visiting with State Senate Democratic Leader Diane Hesselbein of Middleton. The legislature kicks off its new session on Monday. And with the inauguration of new members, and we were talking about the fresh faces, and we were talking during the break, Senator Hesselbein, about the fact that there is literally a new generation on the Capitol steps about to come in. And as one of the very, very earliest Gen Xers, I'm looking at you youngins in the Gen X time frame and saying, welcome. It's about time we got you here.
It's about time. It's amazing that all of our flips are Gen X, right? We figured out that a lot of them graduated in 1989, so same as I did. So It's kind of fun. We all looked at each other like, wait, what? How old are you? How old are you? You know, because you don't usually have those conversations on the campaign trail. Who cares? But they all made it through, and Gen X has arrived.
Well, it'd be curious then to see what motivated them. When I came in 2006, it was a lot of frustration with the Iraq War. And other things about George W. Bush. People, you know, before that were motivated by various factors. And so I think as we get to talking to all the new members, and again, we talk to them as candidates, but we're going to talk to them now as senators, to talk about their story and what motivated them. I mean, do you give a typical origin story as far as what motivated you to first run for office?
I ran for office for the Middleton Cross Plains Area School District Board of Education. I was at a meeting just as a parent. I had three little kids, and somebody in the audience said something racist, and nobody said anything. Nobody said, we don't say those things, or what are you talking about, or that's not okay. But I said that. And then I thought, I don't really want to live in a community where people don't check that or don't, you know, that make that somehow okay. So I ran in 2005. And I made it through.
Gosh, we were just talking about that last hour with Jim Santel about Jimmy Carter and the whole notion of, you know, actually putting decency back into public service. And I guess let's try to put some perspective on this with Donald Trump coming into office. And there are those folks who are saying, well, Democrats were saying all through the campaign, you know, this is going to be the end of democracy. And now that Trump has won, they're like, well, you know, we're going to try to do the best they can. We're Democrats, you know, exaggerating the threat. And I would contend, no, I don't think there was an exaggeration of the threat, but we are where we are right now. And all you can really do is continue to prove that there are still decent, service-minded people in office. That's certainly what I see you know, in your caucus, the both the new senators and the ones who've been there.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And, you know, I have said for so long, and now that we have fair maps, and I really do think the Democrats, you know, with great candidates in 2 years and with fair maps, I think we're going to be able to take the majority. But remembering why we got into this work in the first place, I think power, it can be difficult, right, for people to handle. But when you treat people correctly, and you treat them the right way, then I think we're going to be looking out for all Wisconsinites.
As we look at the issues that will have to be dealt with, of course, we've mentioned the surplus, we've mentioned tax cuts, education, things like that. One issue that is sure to come up again is accepting the federal money to strengthen Badger Care by expanding Medicaid coverage. Wisconsin is one of only 10 states now that have had Republican leadership all this time, and so they've continued their temper tantrum against the Affordable Care Act and not accepted it. Do you feel like, again, with the smaller majorities for Republicans, there may be some kind of a tipping point toward full or partial accepting of expanded Medicaid coverage for Wisconsin families?
I believe that the Senate Republicans will be open to that conversation. It is very clear that Speaker Robin Voss is not, and he has made it clear that as long as he is Speaker, that will not be happening in the state of Wisconsin, which is too bad, because as you mentioned, all these other states have taken it. And really, why don't you want your friends and neighbors to have the best health care possible that they can have? It doesn't make any sense to me. It never has. Years ago, the Republicans said it's all going to go away when there's a Republican president, Congress, and Senate. We saw that trifecta with Trump. It still didn't go away. So I said, look, it's not going away. They're not doing it. I told you they wouldn't do it. You can't unravel the Affordable Care Act and Badger Care expansion. I'll continue to have that conversation. I'll argue that on the floor.
And Senator Mary Fialkowski, the Senate president, has also said that expanding Medicaid is a non-starter. So let me try to come at it then from the half a loaf approach, if you will, on two different things. One, on Medicaid expansion. If not the full Medicaid expansion, might we see some motion toward covering more women postpartum instead of 6 weeks, giving them 12 months of Medicaid secure, affordable, stable coverage? Because I believe we're now up to 48 states that do that.
And 49. Yeah, 48. It's us and Arkansas are the only ones.
Us and Arkansas.
Arkansas, of all states that we have that in common. So we did pass that in the Senate, and then it died in the Assembly. The only person I think that voted against it in the Senate was Dewey Strobel, who's no longer here.
Right.
So I'm hopeful we can bring that up again, pass it, and get that done, because right now people just get 60 days, I think, postpartum care, and everyone knows that day 61, boom, you're not all magically wonderful better. Things happen all the time. So getting people postpartum coverage, if they need it, is extremely important for the state of Wisconsin residents.
So that's one thing we may hear in terms of at least making some progress on Medicaid expansion. And then in terms of education, if not, you know, the full amount that Superintendent Underly is looking for, there certainly has been a lot said about the one part about special education, where special education costs are reimbursed around 35% or so for public school districts, but 90% for voucher schools. And I think as more people learn that and say, how did this get to be a thing? What are your thoughts that special education reimbursement might be at least one of those potential win-wins that is struck in this new state budget?
Well, people should be outraged, because it really is not fair for school districts to have to cover that entire cost. We have so many students who need help, and they deserve the help, and they are wonderful, and they just need a little extra boost in the classroom and sometimes out of the classroom, and that costs dollars. So absolutely, that'll be part of our discussions going forward. Special ed funding and also mental health funding, not just K-12 schools, but all over the board, we do need to do more with mental health.
And Corinne Hendrickson and everybody else, we didn't forget you. Child care counts. Child care costs are crazy. And again, Republicans have consistently blocked that. The extended funding that Governor Evers reallocated is scheduled to run out in June. And so something has to be done about that as well. Diane Hesselbein will be leading all of this for Senate Democrats. Diane, thank you again very much for the visit. Enjoy the inauguration day on Monday, and we'll check in with you throughout the session.
Thanks so much, Pat. Appreciate you.
You bet. Happy New Year to you.
Happy New
when
Year.
When we come back, Mark Jacob joins us. This is Up North News Radio on the Civic Media Radio Network.
You're listening to The Eagle, WLCX, Lacrosse's home for Nightlight with Pete Schwabe.
Local radio for you and your community. It's Civic Media's mission with stations across Wisconsin. Find your favorites at civicmedia.us.
The USDA's H5N1 monitoring program set the lofty goal of eradicating the virus from U.S. dairy herds. I'm Charity Seebecker for the Midwest Farm Report, and Lucas Sostrom of the government affairs team at Edge Dairy Cooperative says the average producer shouldn't feel much impact from the program.
Unless, of course, their herd is positive and they wouldn't have found that before, that's maybe good monitoring, maybe catch things faster. And USDA has stated that their goal is to stamp this out. So I can tell you across our 9 states, we have been asked to provide feedback. We'll be providing feedback. And across our 9 states, they're kind of all the same as what I described. Doing it at the silo level is a problem. We turn over those milk silos at the processing plant fast. And so the trace back actually becomes more of a burden than necessary. Doing it at the milk truck level is a lot more samples, but maybe that's faster. And then doing it at the farm level, I think, is just probably impossible, but ultimately it's up to the states on how they want to do it, the percentages they want to get, and we'll learn from these first 6 states as we go forward.
I'll have more agriculture news right after this.
Giving back, it's at the heart of the Wisconsin farmer, and it starts with supporting the backbones of our community. That's why the Wisconsin Soybean Marketing Board invests in soy foam for our firefighters. Soy foam TF1122 is the first and only firefighting foam green screen certified at the gold level. As a PFAS-free firefighting foam, it's safe for you and the environment. A safe future for your community. Thanks to your soy checkoff. Learn more at wisoybean.org.
Can you predict the future? I can't. That's why when I'm planting soybeans, I treat with Heads Up seed treatment. With more than 15 years of research, Heads Up offers proven protection against both white mold and sudden death syndrome. So no matter what the year throws at you, you've already taken that first step to be prepared. Don't let your beans suffer from disease when they're just starting to look their best. Tell your seed dealer you need Heads Up seed treatment. Learn more at headsupst.com.
I'm Charity Seebecker for the Midwest Farm Report with a look at your agribusiness news. The Fund for Rural America, Compeer Financial's corporate giving program, is offering 123 scholarships to students this spring. Graduating high school seniors with an agriculture or rural background, or those planning to major in an agriculture-related field, are encouraged to apply by March 15th. The $1,500 scholarships go towards educational tuition expenses at community colleges, universities, or technical schools. Qualified applicants must be graduating seniors residing in Compeer Financial's 144-county territory with a 3.0 GPA or higher. This is based on a combination of written essay submissions, academic achievement, and agricultural community or youth organization involvement. Students can find more information and complete the online application at compeer.com/scholarships. For the Midwest Farm Report, I'm Charity Seebecker.
Your news, conversations, and a whole lot of fun. It's all on your local Civic Media radio station or the Civic Media app.
Partly cloudy and cold today, our high in the mid-teens, but the wind out of the northwest at 10 to 20 is going to keep that wind chill below zero all day long. Tonight, mostly clear, down to around zero for a low. Tomorrow, sunshine with a high once again in the low to mid-teens. I'm meteorologist Sean Cable. Outside right now, it's 12.
The Todd Albaugh Show.
What's going on in Washington today as we move into 2025? Have your antenna up. Don't rely on all the media sources. Just your own wisdom, your own heart, your own gut. Listen to what they're saying about our friends and neighbors and family. Because we innately know these people that we live with every day in our communities. Don't allow words and thoughts to tear us apart. Hold fast to that which we know, which is good.
The Todd Albaugh Show. Weekdays, noon till 2. On your local Civic Media radio station and on the app. Matt Nair on air. This shouldn't be a thing.
Hot Dr. Pepper is the hottest holiday drink, but is it any good?
Jane, I'd like to answer that question.
Yes.
No. Have you ever had a hot soda in your life?
Yes, they're terrible. You can also do apparently 80% eggnog and 20% Dr. Pepper.
Get out of my country.
Matt Nair on air. Weekdays 10 till noon on your local Civic Media radio station and on the app. Earl Ingram.
Join me on the next show. Sandy Williams will be here to ring in the new year, and we'll discuss the biggest issues affecting everyday Americans headed into 2025.
The Earl Ingram Show. Weekday mornings 8 till 10.
A
Ladies and gentlemen, Craig Bach will be stepping to the microphone next to give us the correct pronunciation of half of Daft Punk, whose song you're hearing here. He's got to put on his beret, put down his baguette. And Mr. Bach, the birthday boy's name today is?
Thomas Bangalter.
No, I'm sorry. That can't possibly be right. But if you say so, all right.
Bye!
I took 3 years of French in high school, and I would have butchered that any way, shape, or form. So thank you for that. Mark Jacob joins us now. We're going to talk about coverage of the passing of former President Jimmy Carter and certainly the Trump transition as well. You can also catch his Stop the Presses newsletter at stopthepresses.news. Mark, good morning. How are you?
I'm doing great. How are you?
Doing very well. Thank you. Where do we want to start here? I'm going to start with something that we discussed in our last hour with former U.S. Attorney Jim Santel about this Sixth Circuit Court of Appeals ruling that strikes down the concept of net neutrality. And it's an offshoot of a very conservative Supreme Court decision recently that is going to make it much harder for federal agencies to write rules that can protect consumers against things like price gouging. And yet, rather than this being a blow to consumers, there was this New York Times headline that said the net neutrality ruling is, quote, a blow to Democrats. Right. And again, we're right back into the framing of the horse race rather than their own readers and how they are going to be affected by things that are in the news.
You know, and Pat, think about this. We're talking about the horse race. When no horses are in the starting gate at all yet. I mean, this is we're like 2 years from the next midterm election, 4 years from the next presidential election, yet the New York Times can't like be distracted with the issue of what's good for the American people. I mean, because this net neutrality thing is and the whole issue of federal regulation has tremendous implications for regular people doing their regular lives. It's not just one of those things that's a DNC or RNC issue. It just astounds me that the New York Times and many other major media just can't cover news events and politics and government from a perspective of how it affects real people.
From the standpoint of the consumer or the voter, whatever the case may be, to let people know that in the case of net neutrality, that your telecom provider could decide to slow down your internet speed, and suddenly you can't watch things on Netflix or whatever. You're going to get all this buffering because they're giving preferential treatment to their big customers. I mean, imagine if that were done with your water or your sewer service or anything like that. And yet, this court is saying the corporations can essentially write their own rules at this point.
Yeah, that Chevron ruling, the ruling you're talking about, is that could have effects in a number of industries, because basically what the Supreme Court, or the Republican-led, somewhat illegitimate, in my opinion, the Supreme Court has decided is that unless Congress specifically says something in its actual legislation, gets down into the weeds, that the government can't, write rules. I mean, it could have tremendous implications to allow pollution, to allow shoddy consumer products. It really is just a green light for a bad business.
And so when we talk about framing, there's one other post that caught my eye, and I think it caught yours as well, from economist Dean Baker. And it's about the notion of tariffs. And I know we've talked about tariffs a lot throughout the campaign, but he wonders aloud, what's taking the national press so long to refer to tariffs in a more consumer-driven way, that they are a tax? They are a tax on imports. And is it that newsrooms want to sound smart, and so they use as highfalutin a language as possible, or are they just oblivious to explaining some of these concepts to consumers who supported Trump, saying, "Yeah, those tariffs, he's going to go take it to China."
Right.
When they clearly, that's not how this works.
No, nobody with a brain thinks that. All the experts are saying, clearly that tariffs are a tax on American consumers, but I guess the reason that they won't explain, the news media won't explain it clearly to the people of America, is that Kamala Harris and the number of Democrats explained it real clearly to the American people. They called it a tax, you know, in effect, it's a sales tax, because, you know, anything you want to buy that has any, you know, foreign origin may cost more. And it, you know, it's going to fuel inflation and everything like that. And, you know, Democrats said that before the election, didn't work. You know, and partly the reason it didn't work is what you just said, is that the news media often refused to explain it clearly.
Well, it again gets back to that notion that of reporters who feel like if Republicans say one thing and it's a lie, or it's a, you know, exaggeration or whatever, and the Democrat says the other thing and it's the truth, and they then write the truth, if they then say, you know, a tariff is a tax on imports, that they're going to be accused of political bias.
Right.
In other words, you're punishing the people who are telling the truth by refusing to tell your readers that they're telling the truth. It's right. It's a paradox I never thought I'd see in my lifetime.
Well, and the fact is that when two sides argue something, often they don't have equally valid arguments. I mean, come on, this is reality. You know, if I think I eat six bags of cookies and I believe it's going to make me skinnier, and my wife says, no, that's a stupid thing to do, Mark. Well, you know, we're not equally valid. And we wrote a news story about it. We wouldn't say, well, some people think if you eat six bags of cookies, it's going to make you skinnier. You know, I mean, this is, and on a vast scale, this is what the news media is doing right now, is making everything into an opinion.
That's perfect, because yes, if there was a Koch brothers funded think tank that put out a research paper that said that, you know, one Dutch scientist has given us reason to believe that six bags of cookies a day will help you lose weight, I mean, Fox News would take that and run with it all day. I mean, you'd be seeing nothing but cookie ads from these guys.
And the cookie manufacturers would be donating to the Republican Party.
Oh, God, in ways, that we've never seen before. By the way, who did it? I think Robert Reich made a note of all the companies that spoke out against the insurrection 4 years ago and said that they were pausing their political donations. But the companies that have now contributed big bucks to Donald Trump's inauguration campaign. And you don't see the reporting on that the way that you saw the reporting 4 years ago that, oh, this company and this company, they are sharply condemn, you know, right, Donald Trump, and they're not going to give political contributions anymore. Where's the reporting now?
Right. There's not enough, at least. And that, you know, that also goes back to the net neutrality thing, because some of the biggest people who are folding right now are, you know, the big tech people. You know, Zuckerberg at Meta seems to be really kissing up to Trump. Elon Musk is, you know, cheerleading for fascists in other countries as well as this one. And so this whole kind of take the gloves off, take all the guardrails off of the worst aspects of American capitalism, and you're going to, you know, that's what you're going to see in the next 4 years, I'm afraid. And ultimately, it's just not good for people.
Well, people don't want
their food poisoned. You know, they don't want their sludge and toxic stuff in their rivers. They don't want that, and it's a good reason they don't want it. But politicians who are throwing the sludge and toxic sludge in the rivers do want it. And so if they pay enough to the right people in government, they may get it.
Yeah, and you get media leaders that frankly want to see that out there, which takes me to the news story about the publisher of the Los Angeles Times, who famously, canceled an editorial about the presidential campaign, reportedly is now talking to, who was it, Rob Schneider and Rob Cheryl Schneider. Hines about starting
Matt
a
comedian and the wife of RFK Jr.
Yeah, about starting a conservative version of The View, the ABC talk show. Again, if you're a reporter, if you're a journalist for the LA Times, boy, it's nice to get a paycheck, but you really got to wonder if it isn't time to move on.
Yeah, and it's tough. I mean, I've been in that. I've worked for terrible owners. You know, I worked for Murdoch at one time when he owned the Sun-Times for a couple of years in Chicago when I was worked there. And it was, you know, pretty excruciating. Some part of it was, but there was still some good journalism being done. And so you could tell yourself, you know, I'm not part of that, I'm part of this, and all that. And Los Angeles certainly needs a good local newspaper. This, I mean, in effect, the Los Angeles Times purported to be, you know, California's newspaper, and it's a big state. It needs to be serviced by good journalism. But I got to tell you, there comes a time in, you know, and I've experienced this myself. I left the Sun-Times, you know, when Conrad Black, another terrible owner, owned it. And they took a lesser job across the street because of it. But so what I'm saying is that I think there comes a time when you just got to go. You just can't work for terrible owners who are doing damage not only to your newspaper, your news institution, but to the country in general. This guy is doing this. He's doing the same thing Zuckerberg's doing, the same thing Musk did. He's sucking up to fascists who have power. And you know, you've seen that in a lot of autocracies. You see that. You see that that's what the whole oligarch thing is about. Is really rich people who want to stay really rich and get even richer, sucking up to abusive people who want autocratic power and trying to keep them in power.
By the way, it reminds me of a post I saw last night from somebody that said basically, if at any time a politician blames something on immigrants, if you just replace immigrant with oligarch, chances are that that's going to be a truer statement, and that's what more people should be talking about. So enough about the people up in the C-suites. Let's come back down to the newsroom level, where again, you're looking for, in breaking news, you're looking to be cautious. You don't want to be too cautious because you'll miss the story. But on the other hand, when you've got a president-elect talking about the New Orleans attacker, and then he attacks this person as an immigrant and talks about open borders, other Republicans, other new Republican news outlets follow, and it's not true. But because of the guy's name and skin color, of course, they assume he's an immigrant. It again is just this reminder that you have to watch every word you say during breaking news. Even if you do have a political agenda, Mark, at your right wing network, you know, A or B or C, there's still got to be something said about accuracy, at least now.
Yeah, and then. You know, I used to remind people, you know, at my news shops that, you know, it's really way more important to be right than to be first. I mean, you know, you want to be both, but it's way more important to be right. And it's really, it's so painful when you make a mistake like that. And the thing is that let's not talk. Here's the thing I want to get across. These are not honest mistakes. When Fox News announces that, well, it sure looks like the attacker in New Orleans came across the border in a truck 2 days ago. You know, when they say that, that's not just an honest mistake. That's a mistake or an inaccurate statement, because it wasn't true at all, from a news outlet that had to pay $750 million for lying about the 2020 election. I mean, this is these people, that's what they do. The lying is their brand. And so what bothers me is when the New York Times and others say, well, there's just an honest mistake. I guess Trump made a mistake. You know, there was a MSNBC, of all people, yesterday were saying, well, Trump wouldn't admit he made a mistake in his initial Truth Social post. It wasn't a mistake,
Pat. It wasn't a mistake.
He doesn't care what the truth is.
Right. No. I've left us too little time to reflect on the passing of President Carter, so I'm just going to give you 30 seconds here to talk about either what you remember most about his presidency or the coverage of it now all these years later.
Well, it is sad that all the good things that people say about him now and have said for the last few decades, that they weren't saying that, you know, in 1980, you know, that was, I think, a failure of news coverage as well. You know, back then, you know, everyone liked, you know, everyone, the news media loves the, you know, the shining new product, you know, the new guy on the horse who's coming to rescue everyone, you know, and that's what they pretended Reagan was. And you know, you can trace a lot of bad stuff that's happening now to Reagan. You really can.
Oh yeah, we've talked about that the other day. If we'd had perhaps more critical reporting in 1980, we might have saved this country a lot of trouble. Mark Jacob, thank you so much. Appreciate it. Have a good weekend.
See you later.
All right. When we come back, Dan Schumacher, can the Packers beat the Bears for a 12th straight time? What do you think Dan's going to say? We'll tell you that answer next. You're up north.
You're listening to the Talk of La Crosse, Eagle 1490 AM.
You're listening to the American Democracy Minute, keeping your government by and for the people. In November 2022, Michigan voters passed a constitutional amendment enshrining voting protections and expanding ballot access. After the legislature implemented the voters' directive, GOP legislators sued, claiming that only the legislature could make such changes. Proposition 2 mandated 9 days of early voting, protections for voters and election workers from harassment, and a tracking system for absentee ballots. It allowed for the funding of secure drop boxes and the counting of military and overseas ballots if postmarked by Election Day, and several other reforms. Conjuring the independent state legislature theory, which argues that the U.S. Constitution allows only legislatures to control election law, 11 Michigan GOP legislators sued. On December 20th, the Federal Sixth Circuit Court of Appeals affirmed the lower court's denial of the Michigan legislators' claim. But importantly, it did so saying that while the individual legislators had no standing to bring the case, a full legislature could, leaving the door open a crack. The U.S. Supreme Court mostly dismissed the theory in 2023's Moore v. Harper case, but Justices Thomas, Gorsuch, and Alito appear to be all in on the theory. For the moment, the pro-voter reforms in Michigan are safe, but be watching for the independent state legislature theory to pop up again soon. We have the decision at AmericanDemocracyMinute.org. I'm Brian Beal.
Let's get back to live music in the lair with Kaylin Cole. The next song you have for us tonight is called 1103. Yes. Is that a time or a flight number?
Oh, that's actually really good. That's a good idea. I think I might have to write another song with that. You'll get 50%.
It's live in the lair. Grab the podcast now at MaxIncRadio.com and listen live on Saturday night, 6 to midnight, across the Civic Media Radio Network.
You're listening to the Eagle, WLCX, LaCrosse's home for the Todd Allball Show.
Well, your Friday morning fix of Grateful Dead tunes is back now that Dan Schumacher is back and Greg Bach is spinning the turntables for him. What do we have this morning, gentlemen?
We haven't been on in a while, but did any of you catch the Kennedy Awards where the Grateful Dead got their Kennedy Award?
I did not. Did you enjoy it?
I did. I thought some of the performances, that interpretations of their songs, how Queen Latifah sang a song by the Dead was out
really?
There. Really? Really a mixture of great vocalists that, you know, did their own version of what those songs were, but it was on it came out on the 22nd of December. So it was a good night. It was a cold evening, so it was nice to sit and eat some popcorn and listen to that good music.
Very nice. All
absolutely.
Right.
They had celebrities on stage in tie-dye yep. dancing because they were all like these deadhead Hollywood celebrities.
They even had a VW bug van out on the stage.
Yeah. Very nice. All right. Let's turn to some sports here. Badger men's basketball against Iowa. Coverage begins at 5 this evening on several Civic Media stations and the app. Head to civicmedia.us to learn more. Of course, well, let's start with college football real quick here. We mentioned this earlier, that the four teams that got the bye, teams 1, 2, 3, and 4, are not in the Final Four. The teams in the Final Four are teams 5, 6, 7, and 8. Mm-hmm. Dan, the bye is not the prize that we used to think that it was, no matter what sport you're talking about.
Yeah, it's just a matter of who. I mean, the bye might have, you know, it kind of comes to the argument of some of these pro teams. Are they going to sit their starters, even though, you know, before the playoffs, you know, taking a week off, you get an extra week. Maybe it was hard to shake off the rust, especially – Oregon didn't look very good, and they're the number one team in the whole country.
Right.
You know, yeah. And Ohio State looked like an all world after they lost to Michigan, you know, and they've come roaring back through the playoffs. So, yeah, it's been interesting. I enjoyed the Notre Dame game last night. I thought that was high energy, even for the circumstances. I've never heard of a bowl game being moved from the night before because of the tragedy in New Orleans. Mm-hmm. But it was an entertaining game.
Well, and again,
the SEC, there's nobody from the SEC in the Final Four.
No, there was never an Alabama to begin with, and now Georgia, the number two team, upset by Notre Dame. So your Final Four are Notre Dame versus Penn State next Thursday in the Orange Bowl, and Ohio State versus Texas next Friday in the Cotton Bowl. The championship will be Monday, January 20th in Atlanta. So of that Final Four, Dan, if you had to pick one right now?
Well, I mean, Texas basically got a home game, you know, playing at the Cotton Bowl. So I would say I like Texas over Ohio State. I think the glass slipper's about to break for Ohio State. But, yeah, I really like the way Notre Dame is playing. I think they play hard, fast, tough football. They're well coached. I mean, what won them the game last night was the unbelievable call by the special teams coach where you had your punting team out there all set up. And at the drop of a dime, the entire 11 run off the field and the offense comes on, which creates – disturbance on Georgia's side trying to get people shuffled in. The argument is, did you get proper substitution time? You know, the refs got to sort that out in their closed meeting. But I thought it was an excellent game. I just thought they were a lot of good games. And now we're moving into the pro. You know, today we'll decide some AFC teams for the pros.
Yeah.
Or I should say tomorrow.
Yep.
And so, yeah, football's in full swing. And we got that Bears-Packers game on Sunday.
Well,
which I will concede that the Bears are going to get killed.
So that would be 12 straight wins by the Packers over the Bears, conceivably. 12 o'clock noon Sunday at Lambeau Field. Hear the game on Civic Media Stations in Richland Center, Park Falls, and Racine, Kenosha. Congrats to Packer safety Xavier McKinney, selected as a Pro Bowl starter. But all of that is kind of the undercard, too, and I never thought I'd say this, Vikings-Lions. For all the marbles on the NFC for the number one seed, I mean, cheers to both teams. They both had a hell of a season. That's going to be a very good game Sunday night to watch.
Yep, it will be. I think I'm cheering for Detroit. I want to see them keep the number one seed, playoff games, things that they've never experienced as an organization.
Yep. Let's see. Bucks lost to Brooklyn at home last night, 113-110. They will host Portland on Saturday. And then the last thing I wanted to make time for here was this notion that Tiger Woods and Rory McIlroy and others are starting this indoor golf league. It's a combination of simulator golf and actual shots, including a putting surface that can rotate 360 degrees and change angles and slopes. And so you make a 35-yard shot into a screen, 64 feet wide, 53 feet high, and then it's actual shots around the stadium after that with a 40-second shot clock. Mm-hmm. I'm so intrigued to see, is this new and innovative and catches on, or if people look at it and go, get that out of here?
Hey, across the whole country, every college right now has an esports team.
That's true.
Esports. Yeah. So it doesn't surprise me at all that they took this step, and I think it's a genius move. You got two main players that are the names in golf supporting it and funding it and getting it going. So, you know, I think it can go somewhere, just like esports has grown tremendously. I mean, I think they've, like UW Stout, they've got 60 kids in that program. So it's an enrollment thing for colleges. It's an interest thing for grumpy old men like us that can't play golf.
It'll be something new to talk about. Yep. So we'll get that at least. All right. Dan Schumacher, Executive Director of Athletics for Northland College. Thank you, sir. Have a great weekend.
Hey, winter is here.
That's right. Mm-hmm. It's definitely there in Ashland.
Yes, Greg, it is.
Greg Bach is back in 2 hours for Matt and Air on Air.
Yes, sir. Our one-year anniversary today. Woo!
Hey, way to go. Congratulations.
Thank you very much.
Have a great weekend. I'll talk to you on Monday. Right. Thanks to our guests as well, State Senator Dianne Hesselbein for joining us, Jim Santel, Mark Jacob, and, of course, Dan Schumacher. And thanks to all of you for being here. On Monday, we'll talk to John Shelton about Democratic messaging after recent elections. Then on Tuesday, Congressman Mark Pocan will be joining us about the new Congress. Up North News is the outlet for Courier Newsroom, a pro-democracy news network building a more informed, engaged, and representative America. I'm Pat Kreitlow. We'll see you Monday morning back here up north. Have a great weekend.
Eagle 1490 AM.
Jane Matinair and Greg Bach.
Coming up on the show, hard to believe, the one-year anniversary of Matinair on air. We're going to celebrate and wrap it all up with This Shouldn't Be a Thing. I hope you can join us.
Matinair on air, weekday mornings at 10. Matinair on air. This shouldn't be a thing.
Hot Dr. Pepper is the hottest holiday drink, but is it any good?
Jane, I'd like to answer that question.
Yes.
No. Have you ever had a hot soda in your life?
Yes, they're terrible. You can also do apparently 80% eggnog and 20% Dr. Pepper.
Get out of my country.
Matinair on air. Weekdays 10 till noon on your local Civic Media radio station and on the app. You can always continue the conversation on social media. Share your thoughts when you find and follow Civic Media on Facebook, X, and Instagram. Soaring high above La Crosse. This is Eagle 1490 AM WLCX La Crosse. And streaming everywhere on the Civic Media app.
ABC News, I'm Brian Clark. President Biden said the risk to national security and the critical supply chain is why he's blocking Nippon Steel's proposed purchase of U.S. Steel. ABC's Mary Bruce has more from the White House.
U.S. Steel, of course, the iconic Pennsylvania-based company, had argued the merger would provide critical funding to keep plants open and preserve thousands of jobs, but the union resisted the deal, saying it was bad for their workers. Now, President-elect Trump had also opposed the takeover.
The president-elect supports House Speaker Mike Johnson ahead of today's vote for Speaker. Johnson tells ABC he's confident he'll win on the first ballot, but ABC News has counted at least 17 Republicans not committing to supporting Johnson. The Surgeon General's released a report calling for stronger warning labels on alcohol to highlight the link between alcohol consumption and cancer. Bourbon Street's reopened for business, but the warnings have gone out from the FBI about potential for copycat vehicle attacks like the one on New Year's Day. This is ABC News.